Welcome, everyone, to today's webinar. Today is the Having Better Relationships with Your Teens and Adult Children with Luis Angel Diaz. We have gotten so many wonderful questions from people for this, and we're really, really looking forward to this webinar. My name is Lynn Serafin. I'm a transformation coach and a book promotion coach and manager for many authors, such as Luis, one of my favorite people to co-host programs with. I'm really looking forward to today's broadcast. I heard what Luis is going to teach on today's broadcast, and I think it's going to be rich, full of information for you, going to answer lots of questions. Let me tell you a little bit how the webcast will go today. It's a 19-minute webcast, not 60, and the reason why we do that is we do know that these kinds of classes really, really benefit from your questions being answered. So if you could feel very, very free, if you're listening through the webcast, feel very free to put your questions in the webcast form on the screen while we're doing the broadcast. And if you're listening on the phone, later in the broadcast, we'll give you an opportunity to ask a question directly if you wish. Give us a chance to open those lines, and that'll be about an hour into the broadcast. Without any further ado, I want to introduce Luis Angel Diaz. For those of you who are not that familiar with him, he is the founder of the Cellular Memory Release Process, also called CMR. He is a holistic healer. He's also number one best-selling author of a book called Memory in the South. I consider him to be one of the best experts on parenting because Luis's story, and maybe he'll tell it just very, very briefly, was that basically he lost his wife when his kids were very young. His wife died very suddenly, and he was left a single father with three young children, and now they're all grown up and they have wonderful relationships. I think that's pretty admirable, and I think that would qualify anybody to be a parenting expert, to be a single parent all those years, have adult kids who like you and who you can speak with and you get along with. That's a major, major achievement. So without any further ado, I'm going to introduce Luis.
Hello. Hello, Lynn. Welcome to everybody. And, this is quite a subject because, we love our children so much. And we sometimes deal with them every day if we are living with them. And the source of joy and fulfillment that comes when those relationships are healthy, are mutual, and there is respect, and there is sharing and support, and the source of stress and frustration and sadness and grief that happens when that doesn't happen, when we are afraid of them or their anger or the conflict that arises. Sometimes we feel guilt, we feel ashamed, we feel we are bad parents, we did a bad job, what we did wrong, what's wrong with them. I mean, it's endless and it's every day. So that really takes a toll on our health, on our well-being in general, even affects our profession, our finances, because, that's what stress does. It really affects us greatly. So, this is a source of stress and what we call emotional toxicity that we can do much better. We can do much better if we know how to do it, if we know how to be efficient parents instead of confused and lost parents like sometimes we become.
Really. And I'm a parent of a grown daughter, and we've talked a lot about working through things with our kids. My daughter's 28 now, and it was a whole different thing, coming from, you're a parent of childhood, a parent of a teenager, and a parent of an adult. These are really three separate things. And we as parents have to really learn how to be different people in different roles in those times. And I think that's kind of what we're going to be talking about a little bit tonight, but also We're going to be talking about the ways that we might be contributing to a lack of clarity in our relationship with our kids. Let's go through that. I know, Luis, you gave me yesterday, when we were talking about this call, you gave me a great analogy about how we can view our relationships with our kids. So why don't you share that with the audience, and then that'll give them an idea of how we're going to approach this subject today.
Yeah. Yeah, the analogy of the traffic light, the red, the yellow, and the green lights. Yeah, it is important to position what we are doing here. I mean, there are so many areas that we can cover in just in parenting. We need the whole course and whole training for that. But today's, you know, we are planting a seed. We are creating some awareness, and I want to focus on the subject for today. It is for parents that are dealing with teenage or adult children. The last conference was about smaller children.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, using this analogy of the traffic lights, when your relationship is flowing and is enjoyable and it grows and deepens in connection and trust, we can say that we are in the green light.
Mm-hmm.
When your relationship is totally toxic, where there is a lot of pain, there is abuse, there is disrespect, obnoxiousness, there is abuse to you, to siblings, your children have problems, behavioral problems, criminal problems, there is a stealing, that's the red light. And then in the middle we have the yellow light, that is that relationship that there is not abuse or disrespect, but there is no connection. There is distance. There is separation. We don't trust. We don't talk. We don't know what's going on each other's life.
Mm-hmm.
There is indifference. And once in a while, there is maybe conflict or confrontation, and we go back to that kind of dull, bored disconnection. So I would say these are the three main places that we can find ourselves in the relationship with one or all of our children. And I want to be clear, I want to use these 75 minutes that we have left to focus on what makes a green light becomes yellow, how we lose connection, how we can go from yellow to back to green, how we can reconnect, how we can create trust in our relationship. And that means we are not going to go into the red light part, first because it's a lack of time, that we don't have enough time to cover everything, plus the people that, the parents that are dealing with extreme situations of the red light, they need to know actually what makes a green light becomes yellow, because
mm-hmm.
from yellow we go to red. And those parents that have red light problems, those parents, they can contact me. We can have a one-to-one conversation. There are many, many, many ways that you can bring that red to green. Of course, it's not overnight. You need to know how to become more efficient in your parenthood. There is a lot of confusion. And today, I think even if your problem is the red light problems, today you're going to learn a lot of things that are going to help you understand why things became red to begin with.
Mm, indeed. You mean why they became red to begin with, or yellow to begin with, or either?
Can you repeat that, please?
Oh, you said we'll understand why they became red to begin with, and I was just querying, is it why they became red or why they became yellow in the first place?
No, how they became red, they're going to understand the process of disconnection and how things become abusive and how confrontations happen and why there is no trust and sometimes such a toxic relationship with people that we love so much.
Terrific. So let's go right into it. You mentioned some things, of what parents kind of fall into, but what they start to say or think or feel when the relationships start to break down. But let's look at that a little more deeply so that people can start to recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
When a relationship starts to break down, what are some of the most common things that parents will do? What is it that you have seen or experienced?
Well, I want to put all this under the umbrella of the ignorance that we all suffer culturally.
Yeah.
I would say parenting is one of the most important roles that we can have, being parents. And there is no school for that. There is no instruction for that. Our instruction is pretty much our parents. We just look at them and we imitate what they did, or we do exactly the opposite. And that's it. That's everything we know about parenting. And that's very limiting, and that's very conditioning, and it can be very, very stressful. Hold on a second, please. Under the umbrella of we need instruction, we need to learn, we need to understand what this role is about and what it is for. Parents are not supposed to be cops, controlling and supervising everything that our children do, mostly especially when they are adults. Parents are not supposed to be friends. This is a big confusion that I even had myself for many years. A parent is not supposed to be a friend, even though you can have friendship with your children, but foremost, you are a parent. A parent is a coach, is a trainer, is someone that teaches children how to cope with the problems in life, how to solve mm-hmm. problems. If you don't teach your children how to go through the problems and frustrations of life, they're going to be very disempowered and very frustrated and angry and depressed, and then you're going to wonder what's going on with this child. Well, this child doesn't have skills. You didn't support them in developing the ability to cope with the problems in life, to solve problems. That's pretty basic. Like, from tying your shoes, brushing your teeth, to dealing with a difficult teacher at school or dealing with a bully at school. We are not supposed to be our teacher's therapist. We are not supposed to be our teacher priest. We are not here to teach them philosophy. Pretty much, a parent is a trainer, and a trainer has patience teaching their kids and teenagers how to go through the different problems in life. And, in the same way a coach in basketball makes you practice 100 times the same move, the same is a father or a mother. So it is important that we separate attitude from behavior. It's important for us to separate the things that affect us personally than the things that are affecting the way they behave and they solve their problems. So many times we take things very personally with our kids, and we become very, very moralistic and judgmental, forgetting that they need to go through the experience in life, especially when they are becoming adults, or they are adults. So one of the things that create this connection that makes the green light become yellow is when we are critical, judgmental, and we are telling them what they have to do with their lives. The moment you do that, you are intoxicating your relationship. That's not your role. A parent is not supposed to do that. You are not here to control or supervise. They have their life. They make their decision, especially when you have teenagers. You had to allow them to make mistakes. You had to allow them to experiment with different things and make their own mind and make their own decisions. You know, it is painful when you know my child is smoking, my child is experimenting with drugs, because you don't know what's going to happen. But at the same time, if they are doing it, let them do it and come up with their own conclusion and realize, okay, yeah, this is interesting, but it's not what I want for my life.
Mm. That one of the most common questions that people have been sending in, Luis, has to do with addictive behavior. And it's not just drugs. A lot of people are talking about video games and Facebook and things like that. And they're concerned. They're concerned. And so what am I'm hearing you say that this is really a matter of letting allowing children basically to make mistakes. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, we had to make a clear distinction here. If you have a teenager, your role is different than if you have an adult child. If you have an adult child that is doing that, it's their business. It's not your business. Let them do it until they get totally fed up with it. I mean, there is nothing you can do about that. You can tell them your worry, your concern, and that you are afraid, and that's it. They are adults. Let them have their experience. You have teenagers. When you have teenagers, they are under your responsibility. The younger the teenager, the more responsibility you have. So it depends the age of your child. You are going to implement different strategies. So it is important that you have clear rules and agreements in the family where you are the parent and there are rules in this house. This is the way we do things. There are things that are allowed in the house and there are things that are not allowed in this house. Abuse is not allowed. Disrespect is not allowed. Okay, you want to play computer games, all right, but homework has to be done first. You had to, whatever are your activities, then it has to be an order, it has to be a sequence. And it's all right if you play computer games, but how are these things? Have you taken care of these things first? If you have not, you cannot play computer games. So now, as you can see here, there is a lot of preparation. I mean, there is a lot of stuff that you have to be done in advance to be able to say that to your child. There is conversations that you need to have with them. There is stuff that you need to write on paper and make decisions together. Okay, this is what we're going to do. This is what is going to happen. I mean, you are a coach. You are a trainer. You need to have a plan. You set the rules. And at the same time, you teach with example. You teach with respect. You teach with accountability. You don't lie, you don't steal, you don't postpone the things that are important and that they're valuable for you. So you follow with your own example, your own plans in the family. So when you are able to do that, children look at you and they realize, okay, there is coherence here. Yeah? So when parents cannot do that first because they don't know, because what they saw in their families, it was dysfunctional, therefore they cannot bring a coherence into the family. So those parents need training.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be coached. They need to be held by the hand and okay, this is what you're going to do next, and this is what you're going to do after that, and you're going to meet with your child, and you're going to talk about this, and you're going to set these boundaries, and you're going to set these rules, and this is what's going to happen when the rules are not being followed, and this is what's going to happen when you have a conversation with your child. We need to coach parents to be effective parents. Otherwise, it's a mess.
So really we're talking about turning parents into coaches.
Yes,
that's really what
absolutely.
We're talking about. Great. So, you know, I know on the second half of the call we're going to be going more into that aspect. You know, how can we become that? How can we transform into that so that we're more effective parents? Let's look first at the kinds of things. I mean, you've been saying it in passing, but let's put it into really crystal clear focus. You outlined the talk for me today, you said that there were 7 points
mm-hmm.
that create disconnection, 7 types of behaviors of parents that
yeah.
parents do that create disconnection in our relationship. Tell us about those and, you
mm-hmm.
know, what they are and why they create disconnection.
Well, the first one is criticism. I mean, stop the habit of criticism. Not just with your children, with anyone. If you want to have healthy relationships, forget about that. That's one of the most toxic things that you can do in your relationships. So playing the cop, yeah, supervising, controlling with that kind of energy that the other person feels watched. Therefore, they don't develop accountability. They don't develop self-responsibility. What they learn is to hide, yeah, and
mm-hmm.
to lie.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes parents come to me and said, but, you know, he's lying to me. So the first thing I say is, okay, put away the moralistic judgment that your son is a liar. Now, your son is lying to you because he's not trusting that you're going to be able to hear or to see what is going on. So they don't feel safe. They don't share. So what is that happening? Well, probably you are playing the policeman role, yeah?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You are playing the cop. So number one, stop that. Number two, don't give advice when the advice is not being asked for. Very important, mostly in older teenagers and adults. There is one of the questions that I read is what should I do when I have things to say? Okay, it's wonderful that you can express your opinions and your feelings, but ask permission first.
And also, I would think if you're saying this is my opinion, rather
yes.
than saying this is how it is,
yes.
it makes it completely different, I would think.
Yes, and the way you say this is my opinion, this is also important, yeah? Because one, you can say like the queen or the king, this is my opinion, yeah? Another thing is to say, would you like to hear my opinion on this subject?
Mm-hmm,
I have some
mm-hmm.
ideas about this. Would you like to hear them? And if they say no, like sometimes my children do that to me, I just shut up. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they have the right to figure it out themselves.
Mm.
And
I do that with my friends. They say, do you want to hear my opinion? I sometimes say, not today.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, sometimes they want to be heard, you know.
Yes.
They want to know that they can count with you, that you are there, and they want you to know what's going on, but they want to figure it out themselves. And that
mm-hmm.
is totally fine, because they need to grow in empowerment, figuring out things themselves. And that happens with my children, you know. I have the perfect solution because I've been trained to be a fixer all my life, you know, healing
mm-hmm.
and helping people. You fix them up, yeah? So I have answers for everybody. So they know that. But at the same time, I taught them to find their own ways, and mm-hmm. I tried not to rescue them and save them from their problems. So they grew up more and more empowered. So they find out a week later or 2 months later, they get sometimes to the same place I wanted them to be 2 months before, but they didn't themselves. And that is such a satisfaction for me when I see that, because they figured it out and they learn from the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So don't give advice when they don't ask for it. It creates resentment and disempowerment.
You also used the word rescuing, Luis, and that's a word that you used on the other three calls. And I remember that you kept saying that giving advice when you haven't been asked for it, that's a form of rescuing, and people don't necessarily aren't aware of it. So that's great, great reiteration of things that you've taught on the other three calls.
Yeah.
So criticism, controlling, supervising, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing is giving them advice when someone hasn't asked for it.
Yeah.
What's the third thing that creates
the third one is possessiveness, having this assumption that your children are an extension.
Hello? Luis, you disappeared, or I did. Luis? Okay, now he looks like he's been knocked offline. So, so we'll give him a second to call back in. And in the meantime, while you're listening in the webcast, until Luis comes back on the line, keep putting those questions or comments in the question field. We have like over 50 of them in there right now. Any other of your primary challenges, sadnesses, or frustrations in a single sentence, if possible, that you have with your adult or teenage children? I don't see Luis dialing back in. If I don't see him in a minute, I'll try to dial out to him on Skype and see if he can call in through there. Because that, I don't know what happened to his phone line. Let me give that a shot and see if I can get him dialed in. But do continue with your questions. Let's try to see if I can get him in on Skype. Oh, let's see. Well, he's not answering on that, so I'm not sure what's going on there. Seems to be a problem with the phone line. Hold on just a minute, guys. Don't hang up. We will get him back. And in the meantime, do in the webcast, there's a whole bunch of you in the webcast room. Do put your questions there. I'm seeing a lot of them starting to come in. Fewer of you are on the telephone line, and I have a feeling it may be because the phone line is having a problem because we lost our host. So, but do continue to write your questions in, and I'm going to trust he's going to come back in a minute. I'm going to try to contact him on Skype. It's always possible there was a major breakdown somewhere, telecommunication breakdown. Okay, don't go away, guys. He's not replying to me on Skype. So he did say earlier that he wasn't in front of his computer. And I don't have a phone number to dial out to him. So give us just a couple more minutes. I would put us on hold, but I don't know how to do that. So just kind of sit tight for a few minutes. I'd be happy to just look at your questions, read some of them out loud. Some people are asking about sexual abuse. Some people are, somebody was talking about setting limits. I think we've been covering that. Fielding anger and intimidation, that's something that we might be looking at. Hey, Luis, you're back.
I'm back, and I didn't...
There you are.
I was out.
Great. I tried to call you on Skype.
I kept talking and, you know, solving the problems of the world.
Okay. So you're giving advice when nobody was asking. Okay.
Yeah. How frustrating that can be.
All right. Okay, well, thank you all of you for not hanging up. Let's get back. The 7 points that create disconnection. You were saying thinking they are, boom, that was number three, and you disappeared right there. So we didn't actually hear.
Yeah, I was already talking in the number four.
Okay.
All right. So I don't know how far I went into the thinking,
you didn't. It started. You didn't. You got cut off right away. You got cut off right as soon as you said.
Okay. All right.
Sorry.
Let's rewind.
Yeah, rewind.
Okay. Well, you know, when we think that our children are an extension of us, of me, of my family, and whatever they do affects their my reputation, my image, is going to affect very much my relationship with them, because I'm not going to respect their choices, their career choices, their professional choices, their relationship choices. And that is very, very damaging when we impose our ways, thinking that they are a continuation of me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I'm a little scared.
I am here.
So once in a while, you just sing a song for me, okay?
Okay. So thinking that your kids are extensions of yourself, why is that very damaging?
Because there is no respect. There is no autonomy. You are not treating them like full, complete human beings. You are working under the assumption that they are like an appendix of you or a continuation. Therefore, you get upset based on what they do with their life and what their choices are about. That creates a lot of power struggle and conflict. And children have two choices. One is to rebel against you. The other is to get submissive and say, yes, Dad, or mom, and you will pay a very high price when they say yes, when actually they don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So stay away from that. That's one of the most toxic things that make a green relationship become yellow and a yellow relationship become red.
I know, speaking for myself, that was my relationship with my mother. I was simply an extension, and it made me leave, and then everybody blamed me for leaving, and I couldn't, as a child and as a young, not a child, but a young adult, I could not explain why, because it always felt like I was wrong. Now maybe other adults, parents themselves, can reflect back in their relationships and see that, and see where they might be doing that to their kids. I agree with you. It's a very
mm-hmm.
toxic thing.
Yeah.
Very, very toxic thing.
Yeah,
to do.
And remember, our role is to train our kids to be skilled enough, to be empowered enough, to solve the problems that life is going to bring to them. Our role is not to tell them what to do or how to do it. Our role is to support them, teaching them and training
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm. Great. What's the fourth thing that causes disconnection in our relationships with our kids?
Well, now we go into the whole family of suppression, things that we suppress
okay.
in the relationship with our children, like the expression of affection, love, the simple hug or holding them in your arms. Letting them know that you feel affection for them. You are there. They can count on you. You love them. And you care about them. That's very important. And sometimes parents, we forget that piece. We get too distracted with our own lives and all the things that we had to resolve in life. And we assume that our kids know that. Then if we don't have effective parenting skills, we are too distracted with the stress of parenting. And all around our relationship with our kids is affected by the stress and the negativity. So very simple, let them know that you care about them, that you love them. And because you love them, you respect their autonomy. because you love them, you respect their choices. Because you love them, you are not going to do the homework for them. Because you love them, you are not going to clean the room for them. So it's very important that, but we have, again, we need to be able to have conversations about how the things work here in the house. These things are not being allowed in the house. Do you want to smoke? All right. I hate smoking. I don't like smoking. I am afraid for your health when I hear that you are smoking. But you are not going to smoke in the house. In this house, we don't smoke. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And I do that because I love myself and because I love you. Yeah? Now, go and have the experience of smoking out there and see what happens. So in a way, you set boundaries. In a way, you let them know you love them. In a way, you let them know you don't agree with what is happening. You know, I love you, but I don't agree with what is happening. Mm-hmm. And you have all the right to do that. So sometimes we condition our love. All right, if you're going to keep seeing that man, I don't love you anymore. I don't talk to you. You don't have my affection. I'm not here for you. If you're going to study that, or you're going to go there, or you're going to stop doing that. So it's like we blackmail them, and we put our love in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And our love is unconditional. I love you even if you smoke. I love you even if you are dating that person that I don't like at all. Now, you don't smoke here. I don't want to see these people in my house. You set your boundaries, but love is unconditional.
Mm. So not suppressing your emotions according to their behavior, or, you know, I think another word I heard you use once on another call was emotional blackmail. So, you know, not resorting to that, not suppressing our
affection. Yeah, you have to, and you have all the right to be authentic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because that's also part of the, is actually the seventh point here, is the separation of your opinions and your feelings. So you withhold, you don't express your truth, you pretend and that you are fine when you are not. No, when you are not fine, you are not fine. Now, you don't have the right to impose that, especially if your child is an adult.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you have all the right to say that you are not feeling fine.
So you jumped to number 7. We didn't do 5 and 6, but since you mentioned number 7, I really relate to that one too, because you say suppressing of our own feelings and opinions means that later in life we just don't have that relationship to bring them in. And so many parents think that they can't show their fears and their vulnerabilities and, you know, their limits with their kids, you know, short of having a big anger fit. But so many parents don't think that they can express those things. And remain parents. They feel that it makes them look lower in their parents' eyes. And my experience is that kids actually want to know that we're human beings.
Absolutely.
They want to know that we have vulnerabilities. We're not demigods, you know, that they have to bow down to or be afraid of.
First and foremost, we are human beings. Then we are parents.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all the right to express your feelings, and to be able to do that, you also, it's part of the rules of the house, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So you
mm-hmm.
had to allow them to express their feelings and opinions,
mm-hmm.
even if you don't like what you hear,
mm-hmm.
as long as it's done with respect, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah.
If they're calling you names or being disrespectful, that's a totally different ball game,
mm-hmm.
and that is part of the rules of this house. So that is why there is a lot of work that you had to do in advance, yeah? Like sometimes questions are, what do I do when my son throws me a chair, yeah?
Yeah?
Well, man, it's kind of too late. When that is happening, it's because you have not been doing the homework before in advance.
Mm-hmm.
So how a relationship gets to that point where a child of you is physically abusive and disrespectful, yeah? So that's why we need to coach parents to be coaches. Yeah.
Right. And as you said, we're not getting into that whole kind of red light aspect today, because that's a whole course that we could
There is so much process that needs to be undone when things are in the red light.
Yeah. Right. So there are two more suppressions. I know there are 7 points altogether, and then you gave number 4. I'll repeat them at the end, so if people are writing them down.
Yeah.
And we'll probably, you can send it to them in an email, I would imagine, after the call is over. The two other types of suppression, it was number 5 and number 6, because we jumped to number 7. What are those
two suppressions? Yeah, number 5. Number 5 is the suppression of admiration, acknowledgement, recognition for your children. I mean, there are many things that surely you feel proud of. They have talents. They have virtues. Let them know that you see that, like a good coach does. When when you make a good move playing basketball, the coach comes to you later or during the game and says, good job, yeah? Keep doing that. So it is important that our children receive that. They know when we admire, we will feel proud of them. And they need to hear recognition and acknowledgement. Don't you? I mean, every parent wants to hear that too, yes? That's a very human thing. It's very important. And gratitude. Do you express your gratitude to your children?
I want to offer, this just came to mind, I want to offer an acknowledgement that maybe parents don't always think of when you become a grandparent. And Luis, you and I are both grandparents, so, you know, one thing that I think is very important to tell our adult kids who have children is that they are good parents, that they're doing a good job. You know, you say, oh, you're such a good mom, or you're such a good dad, something, you know, when you see it there. I think that's a really important thing. And I think coming from their parents, that means a lot.
Yeah.
You know, so I just want to throw that out. This is my idea. What do you think of that? That's part of the expression of admiration.
I think it's very important when it's honest and you really see that they are doing a good job. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, like, you know, my daughter is the one, I have a child, a grandchild, and she knows that if I have some feedback to help her be more effective in her parenting, I'm going to give it to her if she asks for it.
Right.
So it's good for them to know that they can hear both things, support when things are confused or frustrating or there is conflict, and support when things are going well. So in a way, it's like it's a guidance that you're giving to your children when they are adults.
It's so important, and we tend to forget about that. So what's the 6th one of suppression?
We tend to forget about saying good things because we were programmed with the idea, with the assumption, the totally false assumption that criticism is a good thing. And the more you criticize a person or a child, they're going to be better people. And that is false. That's not true.
Totally.
So we need to get used to get rid of criticism out of our life and include different, more effective ways to deal with feedback that is not in that way, and one of them is using positive feedback. So the number 6 is another suppression, and it's a very, very common one, is suppressing our apologies, our regrets. Being human beings and being able to come back to our children a week later, a day later, an hour later, or 10 years later, it doesn't matter. And being able to say, I apologize for that. I'm feeling regrets for what I did or what happened. It's very important that we show that that is possible so that they also can do that. And being able to say, I'm sorry, and make amends, because sometimes it's, especially with children, teaching them I'm sorry. It's not enough because it's okay. You know, I hit my sister with a truck. You know, on the head. I'm sorry. Well, that is not enough. Yeah. We need to be able to make amends. Okay. How are we gonna work with this? And how are you gonna deal next time when you get angry at your sister? Yeah. So it's very important that we train our children to deal with their frustrations. When they become teenagers, they learn how to do that in real life. And when they are adults, they are on their own, pretty much. Unless they come for advice or they ask you, it's their business. You love them and you watch them and you let them know that you are there, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to reiterate the seven that you said, and the seven points that create disconnection. One you said was criticism, control, supervising, in other words, policing them. Number two is giving advice when they didn't ask for it. Number three is viewing them as extensions of yourself, you know, not independent, not autonomous beings. Number four, five, six, and seven are all suppressions. And so number four was suppression or lack of expression of your love and affection, suppression of your expression of affection. Number five was suppression of your expression of admiration, suppression of acknowledgement of their, you know, what good you see in them. Number six is suppression of our apologies, not being able to express the I'm sorries and the regrets and moving through that, and, you know, not something empty, but really moving through that. And number seven was suppressing our own feelings, opinions, boundaries, fears, and things like that. That's a really great checklist, Louise. What do you think can happen when somebody just simply becomes aware of those things?
Well, probably the first reaction could be, oh my God, I've been doing all this, and I feel horrible. So, all right, feel horrible for a while. You have the right to do that. It happened to me too while I was discovering these things. And move on, because you have not been trained to be an effective parent. Actually, none of us have. So still there is a lot that you can do to change things, and you are willing to start right away. So find a way to support yourself, get the coaching that you need, and you will see things changing in front of your eyes, and you will be amazed to see what happens.
Mm. So on that note, before we get to the second half of the conversation, second half of the conversation is going to be about making the shift, the positive things you can do to make a shift. Those were all the things not to do. This is we're going to go to the things you can do and also open the line to questions in the second part. But before that, Luis is just mentioning about getting coaching for yourself to help you become a more effective parent so that you can basically support your kids and help them be happy and whole human beings as well. Luis is offering his one-to-one, I say one-to-one here in Britain, you guys say one-on-one coaching, private coaching, one person and one coach and one client coaching for relationships this year. And this month he would like to open the door to people who are working, who would like coaching around working with their children, whether it's young children or teenage children or adult children, because last month we did a webinar on young children. Luis has about, I think, four openings for the month of June, just four, because he's pretty busy. But we are offering this to you tonight. And there is a link, if you're listening via webcast, I believe there's a link on the page that says something to the effect of request a consultation. If you are interested at all in just exploring, I mean, this is not an obligation. It's not making you obliged to buy anything or sign up for anything. If you are pretty serious about looking into some coaching so you can support your children in better ways, and also if you're looking for coaching around a relationship, an intimate relationship, that's also something that Luis has been working with. But tonight we are talking about adult kids and teens, so that's what we're focusing on. If you're interested in talking to Luis about being a client in a one-to-one situation, and that's over the phone or over Skype, if you don't live locally anyway, do click that button that you see on the screen. And if you don't have the button on your screen right now, we'll send it to you in an email. And fill in the questionnaire. There's just 7 little questions. Basically, are you a male or a female? What's your age group? And what kind of work do you want to do with Luis? And a few little more detailed questions so that he knows what you're looking for. And then he'll send you information on how to set up a 30-minute consultation. It's absolutely free, the consultation. You don't have to worry about, you know, any kind of high-pressure thing. Basically, for you to ask questions, for Luis to ask questions. It's not a coaching session. It's a consultation session where you can ask whatever questions you want about coaching. But, Luis, I'd love for you to tell people what would they experience if they did start to train themselves as a coaching, you know, a parent who coaches. I mean, we don't mean coaching, asking your kids questions and stuff, but, you know, behaving like a coach for your kids. What could they gain from doing this coaching with you? How could it help them?
Clarity, understanding. Mm-hmm. Basically, that's going to give you so much peace of mind and empowerment. I think that most of parents are feeling disempowered, are feeling confused and lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it triggers their own wounds. They become like little kids, confused little kids, when they see the anger or the addictions in their children. We get very frustrated because I don't want to feel like a 5-year-old when I'm 55, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So we become very frustrated, sometimes very angry. The disconnection is so big. So when you get support, when you get your own healing happening, and at the same time you get clear, effective tools to use in your relationship with your children, you are going to feel that tones are being lifted out of your shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually what happens, you know, and your life changes. Your life changes,
mm-hmm.
because you start experiencing harmony in those relationships that so far have been so problematic.
Mm-hmm.
It is very important that whoever joins this program, it is aligned with the way I know it works. Alignment is very important. That's why I want to talk to people and see if we are on the same page.
Yeah, it's not like people just sign up and say, I'm going to hire you. I mean, you both have to click.
It is important that both we feel it, because I don't want to, I mean, I learned that I am more effective when I'm enjoying what I'm doing and I feel aligned with the person I'm working with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important that that parents recognize that they are suffering from ignorance, that they had to take responsibility of their role. They are not victims of their children.
Mm-hmm.
And that they can do it. It's
mm-hmm.
totally possible. Especially those that are in the red light zone, where there is disrespect, abuse, and it's very toxic, the relationship. Give me a call, you know, put your information
mm-hmm.
there. We're going to talk about this, because you can get out of this situation and actually enjoy those relationships.
Yeah, and I want to reiterate what you just said, and then we'll get back to the conversation. Just because we're talking kind of about the yellow light tonight, is if you are in the red light zone, red light zone, that sounds terrible. if your relationship is in the red, none of it sounds right, but you know what I mean. If it's in that real danger zone, Luis has worked with loads and loads of clients on those issues. You know, don't be shy and know that you're not alone. You are certainly not alone in this. There are so many parents on the planet who are experiencing these kinds of challenges in their relationships with their kids. Luis is very qualified, and you can see he's a lovely person. Just ask for a consultation and see if you click. It's as easy as that. And then he'll answer all your questions there. So if you've been frustrated and you've been trying other ways and you really, really want to make a lovely, you know, much better relationship, closer, more intimate relationship, just ask for a consultation. And again, if you don't see the button on your screen, if you're listening to this later, we will be sending this in a follow-up email. Let's get back to the discussion, Luis, because I'm looking at the time, and because you got knocked offline, there's a whole bunch of stuff we want to do, and we want to make sure that we give people a practical exercise at the end. So let's start talking about shifting from yellow to green, because we're talking mainly from yellow here. So how do we begin? What are some of the things, apart from all the nots, the don'ts that we said before, how do we start the shift back to health in our relationships?
Mm-hmm. Well, in a way, I was weaving the solutions while I was talking about the problems. So number one, stop believing that criticism is an effective way to deal with your relationships. It's not. Mm-hmm. That's a dogma. That doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So just doing that, you're going to notice a huge change. Mm-hmm. Ask permission when you have an opinion, especially with your adult children. And even with your older teenagers, ask them, do you want to hear my opinion? I have something to say here. That gives them some power, you know, to decide, and some autonomy. Very important. You have the right to express your feelings, your opinions, and especially to set boundaries. And there are rules in this house, things that you agree with your wife, or if you're a single parent, these are the way things happen in this house. There are yes and there are don'ts that are the way things work here. Especially single parents that are divorced or separated, and the children have a different treatment in the other parent's house. Yeah. So they will say, well, but that lets me watch TV until 11 p.m. All right, that's fine there, but here in this house we have different rules. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to set very clear boundaries and clear rules and talk to your child when things are calm, when things are fine. You can set a meeting with your child once a week to talk about parenting, about our relationship, about how we do things here. Very, very important. Trying to resolve things when you are in the midst of a crisis is a waste. And usually things get worse. So as you can see, Lynn, many of the questions that people are asking are when the mess is already happening, yeah?
Yes.
When we are in the midst of the anger or the abuse or the conflict, well, when that happened, that is an explosion. Now, how do we work with this? So when things calm down, you invite your child to sit down. And, I'd like to talk about what happened 2 days ago or what happened yesterday. Let's talk about this. What happened in you? Your reaction, what do you want, what did you want, what we're going to do next time if this happens again. So you start setting some rules, some boundaries, and then you will see how things really start flowing differently.
Mm. So,
and
you know,
then,
you mentioned...
Yeah,
go ahead. Sorry, Luis. Go ahead.
In the area of suppressions, express your positive feelings, your positive feedback, your love, your affection to your children. Show them. One very incredible way, very effective way to show affection to your children is showing respect. That is a very important component of building relationships. When you respect them, you create trust.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't respect them, they feel they have the right not to respect you, and that sets you towards the yellow red zone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what did you say?
I was going to say you said something before about expressing your emotions. You're talking about don't express them when you're going to explode, and some parents in here are also asking about how do I support my children in their emotions, and I think some of them are, you know, they're at different extremes. Some are at the explosive emotions, and some are with children with repressed emotions who need to feel them more. So there are two extremes here. And not to say that explosive emotions aren't actually suppressed emotions anyway, but I know that you've got an exercise for people to do, and this is a practical exercise we're going to do today, that is about exploring emotions of the parent. So why don't you take us there, because I'm just looking at the time, and I want to make sure that everybody gets this mm-hmm. so they can take away, and then we'll look at some of the questions that people gave.
Yeah. Well, this is let's say like an icebreaker exercise, because when we are building up this connection in our relationship, usually there is frustration. We are frustrated because things they are the way they are, and we are frustrated because they don't change their behavior. Frustration is anger. Behind anger, always. And not just always, 100% of the time, there is fear. So
mm-hmm.
when you're angry, ask yourself, what am I afraid of?
Mm-hmm.
And you will always find something you are afraid of. We
mm-hmm.
learn to cope with anger. We're using anger as a replacement for the fear that we have. So we are scared, and we react with anger. When our children come back home at 2 a.m., when they were supposed to be at 10 p.m., we are not being able to fall asleep. We are very upset. They come in and we just explode with anger and accusations and blaming. And actually, what we are is freaking out. And that is what we had to be able to tell our children and show them, that we are very afraid. While they
mm-hmm.
were out there without calling you and letting you know what was going on, you were very afraid. And if you do that, the response is going to be very, very, very different. And the way you build the relationship is much different.
Mm-hmm.
So the exercise will be, choose a situation that angers you, that you feel very frustrated about with your children, or one of your children, and write it down. I'm angry at Peter because blah, blah, blah. And then, once you wrote it down, ask yourself, if there is a fear behind this anger, what it is? What I'm afraid of when I'm angry like this?
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that I'm angry at Peter because he's choosing the wrong career. He should study go to law school instead of being a musician. Yeah. So, what I'm afraid of? I'm afraid that he's not gonna be able to take care of himself for the rest of his life. He's gonna be a poor musician. And I want a better life for him.
Mm-hmm.
Other than there is another example here of people being upset with their children. Maybe we can get some examples there from the questions that we have. But I'm sure you can write us, what are you angry at? What is your main frustration with your kids?
So let's ask that question. I know a lot of you have put that in, but let's see what people have to say. What are you most angry at? What makes you angry? So if you're listening in the webcast room, put that in the box, please, and give us some insight. A lot of people have been asking, how do I fix something? But this is a different question. What makes you angry? And then, Luis, your second question was, what is the fear behind the anger? Those are two great questions. So what makes you angry? And what is the fear behind the anger? Let's see what some of your answers are. Hope you guys are going to write them. Otherwise, we're going to have to make it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you give me, while we're waiting to see if people answer that question, Luis, because there is a time delay between the webcast and the live broadcast, can you give an example? I mean, I know you gave a little example, but can you give something that maybe is like a real-life situation?
Well, I'm angry at my son because he doesn't stop doing drugs. Yeah.
I mean, that's an example. You're not saying that's real.
Yeah, no, that's not my case.
Yeah.
But it's an example that I'm giving. So I'm angry because he keeps doing drugs.
Okay. So what would be the fear behind that? It seems pretty obvious. But
yeah.
What kind of fear?
The fear is for his well-being, for his future, for his mind sanity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How's going to impact in his whatever future career, finances, who's going to take care of him. I mean, always there is a deep fear behind anger. The angriest we feel, the more afraid we are. So where are we going here? All right, what we're going here is express your children how you feel about their situation.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to have a conversation about it.
So how, what's the secret to that then? What's the secret to that expression? Because usually when we're caught in the anger, first of all, we don't know we're afraid. So you're saying, okay, let's define we're afraid. And then how do we actually bring that forward? How do we actually express that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you can express in many ways. You can write a letter. You can ask for a meeting, in creating a space for it. You can have a phone conversation. I mean, in whatever way, you have to be able to say that what they see is anger, but actually what is going on in you is fear.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a huge difference.
What's the difference it makes?
Well, first, it makes you a human being. You are not the cop. You are not the police. You are not the judge telling them what they should do with their life. Otherwise, whatever is going to happen, yeah, you're going to punish them.
Mm-hmm.
When they see you as a human being, something happens in them. I have an example with one of my daughters when she was 16, and she came to me and told me that she had been smoking for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like punching me in the stomach. You know, it's like, oh, my God. Especially her, that she used to be so, shocked by people smoking when she was a child. So, all right, there she was smoking. And I listened to her, what she had to do, what she had to say. And then I said my truth. I said, you know, I'm feeling very sad and I'm feeling very afraid. for mm-hmm. for your future, for your health.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I know that you had to go through this experience, and I met people in my life, in my profession, that had gone deep into all sorts of substances and smoking all sorts of stuff, and they hit bottom, and then they became wonderful, you know, functional human beings.
Mm-hmm. And so what
then I said, and we don't smoke in the house, so please, I want to ask you not to do that here. And that
mm-hmm.
was it.
That was it.
I gave her a hug, I hold her in my arms, and I say, I love you, and I'm here for you.
Mm-hmm.
So 3 days later, she came back and said, "Dad, I stopped smoking."
Wow.
And for me, it was unexpected. I was not expecting that. I was accepting, okay, this is her path. She needs to go through this. And I know she's smart. She's going to get out of this, but not in 3 days, yes? And I said, "Wow, that's surprising. What happened?" And she said, "You know, after talking with you, I realized this is stupid." And she stopped doing it. So imagine the other scenario. Imagine the scenario where I get angry and I point fingers at her and I belittle her and even call her names. I tell her, "You are stupid. What are you thinking of? What do you have inside your head? Blah, 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 blah." So do you think she'll stop smoking in 3 days?
No,
I don't think she
all.
Would.
No. It's not the natural reaction, is it?
So the same when they come back home late, you know. If they realize, "Oh, my God, I was having so much fun, and my mother was freaking out here
mm-hmm.
while I was thinking that everything was fine, that she was sleeping, she was freaking out."
Mm-hmm.
So next time, they're going to think better, and probably they're going to give you a call or whatever, yeah? But if you make a huge conflict scenario there and you accuse them, blame them, call them name, belittle them, and threaten them, well, I don't think they're going to call you. They're going to keep doing it.
Mm, indeed. You know, Louise, I love that example. It was it's real life, and it really taught a lot, and it was great testimony to that strategy just that way. So I'm looking at some of the questions people are asking, and we're gonna I'm going to take some from the audience. We only have about 15 minutes here, so I want to make sure we can get as many in. There's a couple of questions. Jean in Nashville is saying that her son in his 40s is still angry with her and his father because they got a divorce. And somebody else is asking about how to help kids who are suffering from a post-divorce depression. That's a big issue. Divorce is a big issue, and kids react to that, you know, again, depending whether they're teens or adults, they react to it quite differently. And some will react with anger, some will react with depression. What kind of advice can you give for parents in supporting children who are, you know, quite honestly, maybe traumatized or stuck in the aftermath of a divorce?
Well, remember that divorce is a problem that happens in some relationships, or many of them. And it's a problem that needs to be solved. And a way to solve it is... there are problems in the relationship. The way to solve it for some of those couples is to separate and divorce. Now, it becomes a problem for the family because the children know, all right, we no longer have this stability. We are going to have to go live with mom or dad or just living in different places. It depends how the parents go through the divorce scenario. Not many parents have a respectful mutual divorce process. when children see parents blaming each other, they sometimes they take sides and they support one parent over the other parent, and things start getting messy and messier. So if the parents have already a structure of solving problems where we get together and we talk, and we have already some strategies that we develop to solve problems, going through a divorce is going to be a breeze. It's going to be very simple. When they don't have that, resentment builds up, confusion, a lot of fear that is behind all this anger, and then it gets it gets what it gets, very very toxic. So if you are dealing with adult children, how they are handling their emotions is their business. You cannot send your children to therapy when they are adults. You cannot tell them, go and take therapy. You can give them your advice if they're open to hear it, but sometimes they are not. So sometimes the best thing is to write them a letter. After you have done your process, don't write a letter tonight, because you need to be clear. Get coaching, get support, learn how to express your feelings in a way that are not forceful, are not defensive, are not accusatory or blaming. We don't know how to communicate in a way that is authentic and at the same time shows compassion for others. Usually our communication is very forceful, and critical.
Yes.
When you are dealing with younger kids, well, there you have a lot that you can do, because you are still the coach. You are still the parent that is supposed to give them effective tools to deal with the situation. So different ages, different scenarios. If they are open to talk, be totally honest and express your fear. You are afraid. You're afraid that the relationship will go downhill. You're afraid that your health is going to be affected. You're afraid of the future of the family and the relationship. So it's very important that fears are very clear. And then you take it from there. But at the same time, get support so that you can be clear. At the same time, you can be part of a mutual agreement that is crucial in this relationship, that you are in mutuality and reciprocity.
Okay. So thanks for that. There's another one I want to ask, and I also want to open up the line to people who are listening over Skype. I'm looking on the switchboard. Apparently the switchboard did have some problems, because a lot of people got knocked offline, and now I see them all back on Skype. Hello, all of you on Skype. If you have a question and you're listening in on Skype, go ahead and press *2 on your 10 keypad if you want to ask a question, and I will open up the line, because that will raise your hand. So you just open the 10-key keypad on Skype and press *2, and then that will raise your hand, and I will unmute the line if you have a question. In the meantime, there's a question here. Actually, this is someone who gave three parts to this. This is Joyce in California. Is in several different things here. Is asking about telling a story about how her daughter was sexually abused by her stepfather. In other words, the mother's second husband, or husband after the girl's father, and says that the daughter blames her that she didn't take care of her, even though she did. Joyce feels that she did protect her, and she also left. And she says that the daughter will not communicate with her at all. So it's total stalemate. Not stalemate, but stonewall. That's the word. Total stonewall. Just breakdown. What advice do you have for Joyce? Because, like, if the daughter's not listening, where do we go from there?
Mm-hmm. It's inner work. I mean, you cannot force. I assume she's an adult, her daughter.
We assume, yeah.
It's your inner work. Do your work, and you will see miracles doing your inner work. Sometimes your daughter calls you the next day. You had a breakthrough with your own inner work, and you would be surprised how many times we create these realities and we put these walls. Maybe you blame yourself and
Does. She says she feels extremely guilty. Yeah, she does. She's saying that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you blame yourself, you know, she's probably blaming you because that's a reality that you are creating inside of yourself, self-blame. Mm. Self-blame is very destructive, not just in this case, in this relationship. Self-blame affects your health, may affect your finances because you had to suffer. Self-blame requires punishment. And if there is no judge out there telling you, okay, you're going to go to prison for 10 years for the fault you committed, self-blame runs for the rest of your life. That is what we call emotional debt. You paid forever. There is no an end. There is no a fine. There is no a number where you finish with your emotional debt. So do your work. Forget about your daughter. Just love her. Let her know that you love her, you are there for her, send her a letter, whatever, and that's it. Very short, and commit to yourself, and you will see amazing changes just doing your work.
Mm. So, you know, so, and if the daughter's not listening, you're saying that, you know, maybe even just writing and expressing and learning how to get clarity in your own emotions, that in the long term will shift it.
How many times people tell me, you know, my mother wrote me, my brother that we didn't talk to each other for 5 years left me a message. I mean, things change because we are energy beings. When you start changing the energy patterns in yourself, then you realize that people around you start changing.
Mm-hmm. So I imagine a lot of these answers are going to be very similar, but this is Jean? Sorry, I'm looking at a different screen now. Sorry. Yeah, Joyce. In Joyce's question, the daughter was cutting her out, totally cutting her out and cutting her off. I'm looking at three questions here, three in a row. M.M., Sylvia, and Ishwari. All have their kids have big anger issues. Ishwari is saying she can see it's a generational thing. It's been through the whole family, and she feels that it's covering up deep sadness. Sylvia says that she has a son over 50 who still gets into these kind of angry webs, you know, angry dramas, and he tries to draw her in. And MM says that. Again, it's another son who is actually under psychiatric care who has so much anger that he's actually dangerous. So that's pretty extreme. So how and MM is saying how to deal with this so he can heal. I have a feeling, Luis, you're going to say it's more about us and not healing them. Or what is the answer for that? These are challenging questions. When anger becomes so extreme and so constant and big and threatening and maybe dangerous.
Yeah. Well, this is the red light zone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where things are extreme. There is abusive behavior. There is disrespect and obnoxiousness. It is very important that we separate. We distinguish. If there are mental problems. We're dealing with a totally different situation. And I'm not going to cover that here at this moment.
No.
But we can talk over the phone. You can ask for a consultation. anger is a response to our inability to cope with different situations in life. So in a way, it's a buffer that we put when we feel not good enough, or we feel afraid for themselves or for others.
Mm-hmm.
So when anger happens, that's not the moment to do anything. When things are calm, that's the moment to talk. And we talk about the anger outburst that you had 2 days ago. So are you willing to talk about that? I like to talk about that. And then you sit and talk, and there you create the strategy for next time. What are you going to do when you feel so upset? What I'm going to do when you get upset? And you make a plan and you stick to it. It's very important that whatever plans and agreements you do, you stick to it. So then you put seeds for the next time. And then next time you put seeds for the next time. And slowly, slowly, you correct the course of your relationship that otherwise is going to a very, very painful place.
Painful place, indeed. And, you know, and we can only feel great pain when we really do love our children. And that's something, you know, everybody who's on this call today or who's signed up for the call and will be listening to it in the replay, you know, we know you love your kids. We all do. And that's why you've signed up for this. So, and as Luis has said on other calls, we think that love is enough, and it may be the thing that keeps us going, but it's not enough to give us all the answers. And, you know, Luis is telling you that it's really about us becoming coaches for our kids, people who empower our kids, people who give them practical solutions, people who demonstrate by example, who are clear and clean in the way we express ourselves. And that's really what the focus of the coaching is that Luis is going to be offering to new clients who come on in the coming year, and especially in June. As I said, he's got 4 openings next month. If you'd like to be on the June calendar, please do sign up for consultation this week. So in other words, before the end of May. Otherwise, you won't get into the June roster. And again, to ask for consultation doesn't mean that you have to take the coaching package. It's just to have a chat. And if you want to arrange that, it's a 30-minute session. It's totally complimentary, no charge for it. It is not a coaching session. It's a consultation where you talk, you have a chat, and you find out about each other and whether or not Luis's coaching is for you. And to do that, just click on the button that says Request a Coaching Consultation, and we'll also send that link to you in an email in the follow-up after this call is over. Luis, we're going to have to wrap this up. We have only got about a minute left. Can you give one last piece of wisdom to the people on the call today?
Oh, that's scary. I had to give it.
or not wisdom. One last something, thought, something, an inquiry, maybe an inquiry for them to take away.
Well, harmony and joy in our relationship with our children is possible. We just need to learn how to make it happen. It is practical. It is not magic. It is grounded in real strategies and solutions. You can do that. Anybody can do it. If you commit to that, and you accept the fact that you don't know how to do it. It's very important to recognize that you don't know how to do it, and you will see the moment you know how to do it, it happens and slowly unfolds. Your children are waiting for you to be an efficient parent. They don't want you to be a lost, confused parent that try to do everything but being a parent. And being a parent is being a coach.
Excellent. And on those words, we're going to end the broadcast for today. We will be sending you an email very shortly with all the information on how to request a consultation, and also we'll give you those seven tips that Louise had, the seven steps, and hopefully those of you who didn't tune in, well, if you're not listening to me, you're obviously listening to me in later. I was going to say, hopefully if you didn't tune in, you'll listen to it in the replay. The replay will be available within minutes of the end of the broadcast. To download the audio, simply wait a minute or so, and you will see, refresh your screen, and you'll see it right there, and you can download it right on your screen, and we'll also give that link to you today or tomorrow. We'll get that to you very, very soon. Just want to close the session for today. My name is Lynn Serafin. I've been hosting Louise on Healthy Us on this webinar, and this was on better relationships with your teens and adult children with Louise on Healthy Us from Cellular Memory Relief, or CMR, Mind Body Center in Nevada City, California. And we'll see you again on another webinar very soon.